Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today from the University of Kent and the University of Reading in the United Kingdom. Comes a study about consuming fruits and vegetables and exercising can make you happier. Okay, I think most people understand that, but now there's a study and I'll explain it. Also, we're going to look at how Rush University in Chicago showed that vitamin D intake is associated with a brain cortical thickness among older individuals. What does that mean? We're also going to look at how your body clock may be off schedule. What can help? Prebiotics, University of Colorado. And we have a lot to talk about on health and healing. But more importantly today, after health and nutrition, I'm going to play a clip. Now, why is this important? Because about 10 years ago, I explained, based upon my sources, that they were doing research on how to implant different types of devices that could then send messages into your brain. Now, they would sell this to the public as being benevolent for helping people with brain and nervous system conditions, multiple sclerosis and Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, etc. So it would be a very easy marketing and very easy to get people to go along with it and for Congress to fund it. But then I said, but that wasn't their motive. Their motive was to be able to know how to control a population by starting by controlling certain individuals, mainly policymakers and opinion leaders, that you needed on your side. So, in other words, they were creating a Trojan horse, get something into the vernacular, something we could just take for granted. It's okay, nothing wrong with it. Today, I'm going to play you a clip from one of the, if not the, world's number one neuroscientist. He's not hiding. In fact, none of this is hidden. This is in a lecture that he gave recently, and he has multiple academic qualifications from all the Ivy League schools, but more importantly, in his bio, which I've read, I've gone into his background extensively, he's published over 400 articles, he works with DARPA. That's the Defense Department's unit that does all the super secret research, and none of it is benevolent. It's all based on weapons. So he's going to describe how they have now, the technology now, currently, not the future, right now as we speak, to weaponize your brain without you knowing it. We knew about what was being done by Edward Bernays, the grandson of, or the nephew of Sigmund Freud. He was the father of American propaganda. He was the one who told people in the advertising business how to motivate people to buy a product, even if it wasn't good for them. Think of sugar-coated cereal as one example, or soft drinks, or all the hamburgers. All of that can be tracked back, in part, to his teachings. We don't need that today. A nanoparticle can go into your brain and transmit signals, messages to and messages from. So if someone says, is it possible to understand what a person's feeling, thinking? The answer is yes. So imagine if all these enormous amounts of money into the billions of dollars are being spent, and they've come this far that they can do an open lecture without hiding, imagine what your future is going to be like. We'll hear that. Also today, we're going to hear a short clip from Dr. Michael Yeadon. What I like about Yeadon is that he and I would have had nothing really to discuss because he, for 40 years, was one of the leading Pfizer scientists, if not the leading Pfizer scientist, on vaccines. He is a virologist. He's an immunologist. He has impeccable credentials. He's published all these articles. And he was a policy maker at the science level for governments, for major corporations, until he decided to tell the truth. And once they attacked him for telling the truth, Now he has nothing to lose. He's just putting it all on the line. So listen carefully what he has to say. It's a short segment. Also, I'm going to play you part two of the funeral director, John O'Looney, who blew the whistle on COVID in Great Britain. But he was in communication with all these other funeral directors, and they all had the same identical story. And they, in turn, were in touch with nurses and doctors in facilities such as assisted living, nursing homes, and hospice care. It's part two. It's short. And then I see now, for the first time, some members of the mainstream media willing to have on one of the orthodox doctors challenging parts of the official medical paradigm. Today, we're going to hear from a mainstream, highly qualified doctor, MD, and professor. His name is Dr. Aseem, A-S-E-E-M, Malhotra, M-A-L-H-O-T-R-A. And he is going to take on statin drugs. Now, mind you, ask anybody who has heart disease or high cholesterol. Almost everyone's on statins. It's not questioned. It's good for you. It saves your life. Does it? Well, he's going to give us the truth. Now, mind you, this is not an alternative doctor who has found the light. This is a mainstream orthodox doctor showing you the darkness within the existing paradigm. And every day this week, I'm going to take a different topic within orthodox medicine that we take for granted, that we trust, that insurance covers, government supports, medical doctors use, that is wrong, that's deadly. So is this the thread that unravels much of the orthodox veneer, that it can do no wrong, it has all the right protocols on its side? Well, that starts today. And then, time permitting, something from Bill Maher. We always begin with the latest on health and healing. We know, you know, that you're going to feel better when you eat fruits and vegetables, whole grains, nuts, seeds, legumes, sprouts, juicing. You feel a lot better making a juice, let's say a fresh-made apple juice, a green apple and lemon. That's one of the best ways starting your day. And versus taking some pasteurized, processed apple juice out of a jar. You feel it. You feel better when you're eating fresh, local, harvested produce versus buying something that may have been grown in another country around the world and shipped in. You're getting it 10 days after harvest. It doesn't taste the same. You know, something that's heirloom and genetic tastes different than something that's genetically engineered. So new research led by the University of Kent, K-E-N-T, and University of Reading has found that fruit and vegetable consumption and exercise increases your level of happiness. And while the link between lifestyle and well-being has been previously documented, hundreds of studies on this, to encourage healthier diets and exercise, new findings published in the Journal of Happiness Studies shows that there's also a positive causation from lifestyle to life satisfaction. And I just finished experiencing this with just one person, and hopefully within a month, this person will decide and volunteer to come on the air. When I first got the call to help this person, it was a crisis call. Late at night, an adult daughter called, mother she thought was dead, because she wasn't moving, eyes just in a fixed stare, and that was after one chemotherapy. The chemotherapy was killing her. And she was not unusual. Okay, why wasn't she told this before? And did she really need that? Couldn't they have done surgery, which they could have, instead of going directly to chemotherapy? In any case, that's a separate issue. When that person finished the first stage of their protocol, they commented on, now when they sit down to a meal, a fresh vegan meal, versus what they were eating, which helped get them sick to begin with, everything makes them feel happier, that they're doing the right thing for their body. but the mind had to know to do the right thing for the body. So what it's showing, and that's just one example of how you suddenly make a simple change, unhealthy diet to a healthy diet, a highly processed, sugared, and salted and fried and meat-based diet, to one that has none of that, has only organic, fresh juices. The person's gained back all of her weight. She has no pain. 10 years of having problems in one leg that required her to wear a brace, no longer has that pain, is able to walk normally, and has a very strong immune system with no cancer markers. So the protocols work. Now, it's got to be continued, of course. But her statement to me on Friday was that I now know that what I think becomes the choice I make. So I was in a place where I was not happy with my thinking. Now I am. I'm thinking happier thoughts, more positive thoughts. So I actually look forward to going to the farmer's market. I look forward to making a glass of fresh juice. And that makes me happy. So I've turned my world around. That's exactly what this study found. So the findings demonstrate that the ability of individuals to delay gratification and apply self-control plays a major role in influencing lifestyle decisions, which in turn has a positive impact on well-being. And the research showed that men appear to exercise more and women eat more fruit and vegetables. So just a simple little lesson. But think of all the obesity, diabetes, heart disease, arthritis, cancers that we have in this country that we're not dealing with at all at a time when any of those makes you more susceptible to contracting COVID and even dying from it. So shouldn't we have a national program to learn how to be healthy to begin with? Also published in the Journal of Nutrition, show that the area of the brain, which is the brain's temporal lobe, are vulnerable to Alzheimer's disease among men and women, and you become less vulnerable if you're able to keep inflammation at bay. What causes inflammation? Because you frequently won't feel the inflammation unless you get to a cytokine storm, then it's really serious. By having things that are slightly alkaline, they're your fruits and vegetables and juices. What turns off inflammation? Well, the number one thing turns off inflammation is vitamin C, taken throughout the day. That helps. Curcumin turns off inflammation. Vitamin E also does it. Cayenne will do it. But fruits and vegetables and juices, if you had one superstar among all things you could do to try to keep inflammation out of the body, it would be green juices. That would be the number one thing you could do, high in chlorella, spirulina, the chlorophylls. That's phenomenal against inflammatory responses. And then if you want to bring in the big power in inflammation suppression, it's black cumin seed oil, cumin, C-U-M-I-N. And you dilute that. You take one teaspoon, you put it into a smoothie, and that turns off inflammation all over the body. Every person with Alzheimer's, dementia, pain, arthritis, fibromyalgia should be using black cumin seed oil, generally around twice a day. I don't recommend taking it on an empty stomach. And by the way, it is found the current study that I'm mentioning had 263 cognitive unimpaired participants in the ongoing Mediterranean DASH intervention for neurodegenerative delay trial. And they were 65 and older. And it's just concerning the amount of vitamin D. We're not taking enough vitamin D. Vitamin D can help prevent infection. It's great as an antiviral. And it's also good for the brain. Also, from the University of Colorado comes a study, whether it's from jetting across time zones or pulling all-nighters at school or working the overnight shift or just staying up too late. When you chronically disrupt your circadian rhythm, circadian, C-I-R-C-A-D-I-A-N, or let's make it simpler, everyone has an internal biological clock. And when you disrupt that, and having a cell phone or some form of electro pulse near your head, like a computer or a television, a clock, then that can take a toll. It can impact your sleep, your mood, your metabolism, and that puts you at risk of different diseases. And that's what the university found. So to be able to go to bed at night and have a good night's sleep and reset your clock, turn off all sound and light, and have no stimulants before you go to bed, no caffeine. But most importantly, take prebiotics, which serve as food for beneficial gut bacteria that can play a role in helping us bounce back faster from impacting our circadian rhythm. So, let's just say that you have no choice. Like a couple nights ago, I had no choice. I had to work all night because I was going on the anti-aging clinical study using meditation as the primary tool, and I had a lot to get done before I took off, so I just had to work through the night to get it all done. I made sure that before I did that and after, I had prebiotics and probiotics that stimulates healing within the bacteria in the gut, and that works by stabilizing all good bacteria and their metabolites that they then release throughout the body, and that makes a more resilient circadian rhythm. This was published, by the way, in the journal Brain Behavior and Immunity, and it's the latest study that showed that prebiotics, not to be confused with probiotics, found in fermented foods like sauerkraut and yogurt, but if you have beet juice, that's a prebiotic. Even apple cider vinegar, prebiotic. A lot of prebiotics. And also prebiotics are abundant in fibrous foods. Leeks, artichokes, onions. All good. All good for the bacteria. So that's the latest on that. And one final one here is magnesium is important if you have dementia. Erasmus University Medical Center in Rotterdam. An article published in the peer-reviewed journal Neurology, people with low blood levels of magnesium are at higher risk of dementia. Now, you don't want to take excessive magnesium, you end up with diarrhea. But when they studied 9,500 elderly participants in the prospective study, they found that a lot of people, 30%, had too low a magnesium. So make sure that you're taking the adequate amount you need. Generally, that's between 800 and 1,500 milligrams a day of magnesium. All right, it's not difficult, easy to get, inexpensive. Oh, and by the way, the Mayo Clinic also just came out with a study linking good microbiome to rheumatoid arthritis prognosis. The healthier your gut bacteria, the less rheumatoid arthritis. It improves it over the course of the disease. This was published in Genome Medicine. I remember, do any of you remember, way back in 1975 on WMCA, where I did a debate with the head of the Arthritis Foundation, and all their literature and all rheumatologists said that there is nothing you could eat or drink, no supplement, no food, no beverage, that would either cause arthritis or reverse arthritis. It was all quackery. And I debated that person, and I showed that there was science that proved that, but more importantly, there were clinical experiences. And I had a long list of doctors, Marshall Mandel, Randolph in Chicago, and others that were using diet to reverse arthritis. And then I talked about my own clinical experience, and I had some of the people on the phone who had years of arthritis, put them on a protocol, got them off all the acid foods, all the meat, caffeine, alcohol, and their arthritis went away. They said that's only anecdotal. I said, all of medicine is anecdotal. Everything is anecdotal because at some point, unless you're robotic, you have to actually speak with a patient. And isn't it normal to say, how are you doing? That surgical procedure, do you have any pain? Are you healing that drug you got? How are you feeling? So you can adjust the therapy. That's called anecdotal medicine. And yet now we make anything that the person says on their behalf that shows a problem or an improvement, we make that unscientific. That's what's happening to medicine, and we shouldn't allow it. Our input counts. That's the latest on health and healing. We're 21 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, you're going to hear the new normal. One of the world's leading neuroscientists is going to talk about the weaponization, in his own words, and you would never believe anyone if they said, you know what I heard? Do you know what I read? You're going to hear it, and you can see it. If you go to prn.fm, scroll down, you can watch this person, you can see his charts, you see he's in a classroom, and we'll be back in a moment. Take that journey.
That's already out of the bag, and as I hope to demonstrate to you in a moment, this is being conducted on an international scale, and so it may be a little late to start thinking about we're never going to use it like this and what happens if we do or we don't. What types of kind of neuroweapons can we engage and develop? Well, I provide them for you. I don't want to go down into specific granularity as each one of them do because I don't want to give you bad dreams. And you're not going to blame me if you wake up in a cold sweat screaming in the middle of the night. But this is what we can do with these things. Again, let's think here about drugs and bugs. If we're looking at drugs, we're looking at what we call in-close pharmaceuticals. These are not weapons of mass destruction. These are weapons of mass disruption. What they can be used to do is create particular yet highly selective effects in individuals so that they can be delivered at very, very low doses, yet deliver a high amplification effect that's called a hormetic potential, to be able to alter cognitions, emotions, and behaviors. How do you do that? Well, you can work on key operatives. In other words, this individual who's sitting before me may be a diplomat. They are now coming to interact with me. They may have a posture that does not necessarily align with mine. Can I alter their cognition? Can I alter their affiliation? Can I alter their emotionality? And in such a way, might I be able to alter their behavior? Yeah, I can. And if, in fact, this individual possesses political or charismatic capability, charm, charisma, leadership potential, to then stand before their people and say, this guy's my best buddy now. They might go, well, I'm following this guy. Or they might think he's stark raving mad and I've created social disruption within his political ranks. I can do that on a variety of levels, from individuals who are head of a small family or group, to the tribal, to the community, to the large-scale population. So we can utilize these things to be able to affect key operators and dynamic individuals who may charismatically, politically, or through other means of power be able to affect groups. It's a ripple effect. It is a ripple effect. Moreover, we can induce a number of neuromicrobiological agents to then incur something called high morbidity. These are not necessarily mortal agents. We can modify the existing palette of bacteria and viruses through the use of gene editing techniques. Very viable. This has been some of my ongoing work with my colleague Diane DeUlis at National Defense University. And what we can also do is recognize that there are existing microbiologicals that can be harnessed to then induce the effects. We can also engage certain chemicals that way. What we want here is a morbidity factor, not necessarily a mortality factor. I want to make people sick. And what I do here is the virus is not necessarily the bug. The virus is what I put over the internet. Let me show you how I can crash a system pretty easily. I affect key individuals here, here, and here. And then I take another community in the back of the room. I affect key individuals there. And then I take another community. I affect key individuals there. And then I do what every good attributional group does. I beat my chest and take credit for it. And what I put out over the internet is, this is a virus, a bacteria, an agent that I have infiltrated into your fill-in-the-blank. I say it's a weapon of mass destruction. And what I tell you it's going to do is it's going to produce paranoia, anxiety, and sleeplessness. What I've just done is I've recruited every paranoid hypochondriac to think that they have whatever that is. I've used salient and sentinel cases, and I create essentially a legion of what's known as the worried well. They now flood emergency rooms. They flood their clinicians. The CDC responds back and says, no, 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 there is no such a thing. And I've created a schism of trust between the population and the polis. It's both a short and a long war's effect. Moreover, I can create particular neuromicrobiologicals that may have a much longer duration of action. For example, modified Zika virus. And what I can then do is, as a consequence of that, is I can affect subsequent generations to incur a public health morbidity and mortality effect that then creates an increased economic and perhaps social burden. Long war scenario. If I wanted to do something that's a little bit more proximate, I can utilize nanoparticulate matter. Now, we can utilize nanoscience to create much better drugs, to get them where they got to go in the brain. I can create nanoscience and nanotechnology to be able to escort certain drugs across the proliferant barrier, which is the blood-brain barrier and cerebrospinal fluid barrier. So I get these things where they got to go. But I can also utilize nanoparticulate matter in a very indiscriminate way. The idea here is that I can get something called high CNS aggregation material that is essentially invisible to the naked eye and even to most scanners because it is so small that it selectively goes through most levels of filtered porosity. These are then inhaled either through the nasal mucosa or absorbed through the oral mucosa. They have high CNS affinity. They clump in the brain or in the vasculature, and they create essentially what looks like a hemorrhagic diathesis, in other words, a hemorrhage predisposition or a clot predisposition in the brain. What I've done is I've created a stroking agent, and it's very, very difficult to gain attribution to do that. I can use that on a variety of levels, from the individual to the group, highly disruptive. And in fact, this is one of the things that has been entertained and examined to some extent by my colleagues in NATO, and to those who are working on the worst use of neurobiological sciences to create populational disruption. Very, very worried about the potential for these nanoparticulate agents to be CNS aggregating agents to cause neural disruption, either as hemorrhagic and vascular disruptors or as actual neural network disruptors because they interfere with the network properties of various neural nodes and systems within the brain. Then I get to the area of devices. And this, in many ways, is going to be less than definitive. The reason for this is highly evolving and I think is limited only in certain cases by context of imagination. What are the devices? Well, I have them here for you here. They have neurosensory immobilizing agents. And to some extent, some of these have already been used. Things like high-output sensory stimulators that can be administered from unmanned vehicles, drones, insect-borne, or larger-scale, macro-scale vehicles such as tanks, cars, etc. These are sensory mobilizing agents that use high electromagnetic pulse energy that may also utilize high levels of sound, high levels of light energy, and they disrupt neurological sensory function. Already being used, now they're being developed with higher specificity. The idea of intracranial pulse stimulators take this one step further. Now the idea is to utilize direct electromagnetic pulses to be able to disrupt neural network aggregation. There have been some animal studies that have been done that look at the viability of electromagnetic pulses across various distances to essentially disrupt the network properties of the brain and create confusional models. So these are both individual and group disruptors. We also have the idea of the altered reality tactics that is primarily used in irregular warfare. And here, once again, when we understand the construct of the way neural...
That's just part of an hour-long lecture. As you saw, you could argue both sides. Everything done with gain-of-function research could be shown to help make a virus more deadly in order to create a vaccine with the assumption that vaccine would be able to help protect the people who had that infection. But that has not been shown to actually work. Now we're seeing all the side effects of that. And almost study after study is showing that the government, especially the CDC, is refusing to accept all of the data on vaccine injuries. And that's very serious. So you can use it for biological, and you heard him say this has been used around the world. All these other agencies, including NATO, is offering these. And then you have a story last week. The Navy has developed a new technology that it can pulse at you so you can't talk. Now, we already saw years ago they had that wave that hits you and makes you feel like you're on fire. That's a crowd stopper. And it's been applied in different groups around the world. So where does it end? Who in that whole research complex involving hundreds of thousands of scientists and unlimited amounts of money are going to say, haven't we done enough? When you have a letter that was written without any human input at all by an artificial intelligence that talked about how artificial intelligence will always be benevolent, you don't have to worry about it, and yet we see time and again the mistakes within artificial intelligence, and we see what it's done when it's been militarized. So, once you have an artificial intelligence that understands that it no longer can be controlled, what could it do? Because remember, it's in the cloud. It's beyond 5G. And didn't you hear him say that electromagnetic pulse therapy? I have a person who I've known and who called me saying that that person can't work now. They're a journalist. They're an investigative journalist. Why? Because of excruciating headaches, confusion, forgetfulness. This is a young person in their 30s. I said, what's changed? Nothing's changed. Diet's the same. Healthy diet. I said, something has changed. Do you live in a building? Yeah, a small building. Check the meter. Is it a traditional meter or is it a smart meter? Checked it. It's a smart meter. Do a reading and then see whether it's in normal range. It was 5,000 times normal, and that is not unusual for smart meters. So I said, get yourself into an area where there's no smart meters and no 5G towers. And by the way, there's also a 5G tower on the buildings on both sides. They're on every block in the cities now. And sure enough, within a couple of weeks, normalcy began to come back. Now, that's without intending to hurt people. That's intending to control everything going on in your house or apartment. So it can read whether or not you're overusing water, for example. So they can tell you, stay within this limit of water, or they can limit how much water you can use. Remember, once a smart city, and Bill Gates is funding the first smart city out west, everything in that city is controlled from the cloud. Everything is controlled by artificial intelligence. Everything is maintained through algorithm control. But didn't that just influence elections? And it doesn't matter who you vote for. If the people controlling the algorithms don't want you to know about a particular candidate, they can block information from getting on and have plausible deniability because there's no computer fingerprints. It's in the cloud. And that has been shown to be done. Now, if you challenge the government on anything COVID, anything at all, anything on vaccines at all, Anthony Fauci, you are canceled, but also your message can't get out. They can block you everywhere. So only a tiny group of people know what you're saying. They're doing it to journalists like Glenn Greenwald, Matt Taibbi, everyone who takes a counterpoint of view, and all doctors as well. So that exists right now. Now imagine when they weaponize it. You do realize that the next war will probably be China going after Taiwan. It'll be a test because the leader of China, Premier, has said that's their goal. And they'll do it. And everybody should know that the war may seem like it's a military war, but it'll all be cyber war because that's where they have thousands upon thousands of people working. Because they can turn off your electricity, they can turn off your power. You can't fly in an airplane. You won't have any satellites. You won't have television. You won't have radio. You won't have your internet. You'll have no way. If they want to turn off your air conditioning or your electric grid to a city, they can do that. And yet, that is not being focused upon. But everyone wants to have a deterrent. So everybody's got their nuclear bomb against someone else's nuclear bomb. No, they got their electronics against someone else's electronics. And now they're turning all this over to artificial intelligence. Sound like a good idea? I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. Give us a call, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. This is not science fiction. This is not conspiracy theory. You saw the person. You can read his papers. It's out in the open. Now, he can have his arguments as to why, you know, well, these are just, you know, ideas. No, these are organizations actually manufacturing and implementing this, or intend to implement it. Now we're going to hear from a maverick. But he wasn't. His entire life, he was as orthodox and mainstream and profit-driven as you can get. He only affiliated with Pfizer and other companies. But then he had his epiphany. And a lot of Orthodox people are having epiphanies. And they're standing up. They're as self-righteous in their indignation about the lies being perpetrated within their field and their field of expertise as they were in defending those same processes before they came to this moment of enlightenment. This is Dr. Michael Yeadon, Y-E-A-D-O-N.
Dr. Mike Yeadon. I've had 40 years training and practice in a range of life science disciplines relevant to drug discovery for lung diseases and this pandemic. I have a degree in biochemistry and toxicology, PhD in respiratory pharmacology, and I've been in total 32 years in the biopharmaceutical industry. I was a vice president and worldwide head of allergy and respiratory research at Pfizer until 10 years ago. And in the last 10 years, I've been a consultant to about 30 startup companies, and I also ran my own biotech to a successful exit. I think I started writing in about the summer of 2020, but I knew we were in trouble much earlier than that. We were hearing dreadful stories from Bergamo in northern Italy and other places. Very ill elderly patients were being put on ventilators. Now, influenza and other similar viruses are not diseases of obstruction of the airway, nor do they cause unconsciousness so that you can't breathe. So ventilation would be extremely rarely indicated, and yet they were telling us we're running out of ventilators. And shortly after that, let's have vacuum cleaner makers and car manufacturers rigging up ventilators. These were from government ministers. I'm not a physician, but I know enough about ventilating human beings to know that you need an incredibly sophisticated piece of machinery, and you need to know what you're doing to, as it were, fly a patient successfully, or you'll kill them through overextension of the lungs and so on. This much touted PCR test that was being much vaunted at around that time. I knew enough about PCR to know that you certainly couldn't do hundreds of thousands of tests a day and expect that the answers would be meaningful. They've told us that this virus is much more lethal than it is. You know, the fraction of people that it infects that die is much, much lower than they said. They told us that masks work, and I knew that literature really well. They do not work. They have absolutely no impact whatsoever on transmission of respiratory viruses, even well-fitting, you know, N95 masks or whatever. They just don't do anything. Things like lockdown, they're proven not to work. And we knew that in the literature by summer of last year. I'm not joking. It took me till about the end of the year, and I'm not proud about that, for I realized that there weren't just a few lies in this story. Absolutely every one of the main narrative points that governments told us is a lie. Every single one of them. Unfortunately, I've come to the conclusion that there is a group of people operating supranationally, whose objective is to essentially enslave us all by requiring us to qualify for a vaccine certificate, a certificate that shows that we've been injected twice, in order for us to access our own lives. And I pretty quickly worked out what they're probably going to do is increase the number of injections that you have to keep requalifying. Funnily enough, this weekend, the Israelis said, not just the third injection that you're just starting on, but get ready for the fourth. They would also use these vaccine passports to restrict your access to basic services, including food. Go and have a look in France. They're actually preventing people from accessing certain food stores if they don't have a vaccine passport. So you really don't need much of an imagination now at this point. Someone has hijacked the world with quite a simple formula, but they've managed to repeat it.
Okay. And when you have people with his pedigree and his power formally speaking out, he's taken off the gloves. He and a lot of others. Now we're going to hear part two of a funeral home director, John Olooney, L-O-O-L-O-O-N-E-Y. It's a short 3-minute clip. But he's telling what he observed, what he researched when he saw something was wrong, and he started to ask questions of all the other funeral home directors, doctors, and nurses. He's just one person, but he is speaking on behalf of many others, and none of this, not a single thing that he has shown, has been made public. Here's what he has to say.
Don't lie. They're there. Government statistics that show there was no real increase. And it kind of got to the point where I said to a few people, I began to smell a rat. We weren't being told the truth. And I said to people, I bet the death rate soars in January when they begin vaccinating. And everybody laughed at me. They said, no, don't be so stupid. You're mad. And we came back to work on the 2nd. And on the 6th, they began vaccinating, and the death rate was extraordinary. I've never seen anything like it as a funeral director in 15 years, and neither has anyone else that I've spoken to. And it began exactly when they began putting needles in arms. That was the recognized second wave, and that went on for about 12 weeks and finished abruptly the second week of April. And to be honest with you, I'd never want to see a death rate like it again. It was awful. It was awful. And they were very different this time. It was a mixture of all ages, you know, different, all locations as well. It wasn't, for example, all care homes. It was hospitals, residential addresses, mostly hospital deaths, to be honest with you. And we were finding, you know, it was just awful. That was pandemic numbers, but it was only when they began vaccinating and never before that point.
Were they labeling all these people as COVID deaths?
Oh, as many as they possibly could. Yeah, as many as they possibly could. But I suspect they were vaccine injury deaths, the vast majority of them, or perhaps overdoses of midazolam, or perhaps also a contributing factor is the blatant neglect of people. You know, a lot of families that I've got are telling me their loved ones have died from cancer and they've only managed to present at stage four because nobody will see them. They're not going for scans anymore. They can't get an appointment. They're being fobbed off with Gaviscon. When they've got pancreatic cancer, you know, and stuff like that. And it's just not being looked at. So there's a clear pattern there kind of emerging. And that went on till April 21 and then abruptly stopped. And then all we were seeing was literally the quietest period I've ever known, certainly in 5 years. And I think that's the first time in 5 years as an established funeral director now, that we actually lost money because there just wasn't anyone really passing away. And it wasn't unique to me. You know, I'm in a number of other groups with funeral directors and we joined these groups at the beginning of the pandemic thinking that we would perhaps need to support each other during the COVID pandemic, you know, if one of us fell over, and I'd hasten to add nobody has. Do you know? Mm. So about 3 weeks ago, the death rate started to pick up again. And I'm now seeing people of all ages in, and all of them are vaccine recipients almost exclusively. And the range of deaths is heart attack, sudden undiscovered heart condition that's led to a heart attack, blood clots, stroke, and multiple organ failure. Those are the four consistent groups that I'm seeing, or the four consistent types of death that I'm seeing. And it's all ages. I went to get my hair cut a couple of weeks ago, went into my local barbers and they're all very somber and down. I kind of said, all right, guys, what's up? One of the barbers in there, 23, had died an hour and a half after he'd taken his second jab, you know, heart attack at 23 years old. I've had a guy in whose father went down and got a jab and was paralyzed almost instantly. He was then seen as vulnerable. So they gave him a second jab 3 weeks in and he was found dead at home the following day. I've had a gentleman in who I was doing a funeral for. His mum went blind almost immediately. I've obviously, since I've gone public about my concerns, nobody wants to talk to me now. You know, the BBC, the silence is deafening. They're quite happy for me to promote the hysteria. But now I'm actually voicing concerns and seeing a pattern of death related directly to the vaccines. Nobody wants to talk about it now. And this is despite the fact that there are a number of very, very eminent people, and thousands of doctors globally, nurses, consultants, professors, virologists, all saying the same thing. The government seem to be pressing ahead and blackmailing, coercing and forcing people and slowly creating a two-tier kind of Nazi type society for a pandemic that isn't there. And the Delta variant, I can tell you, is widely recognized within the NHS as vaccine injury. It's not a virus. It's vaccine injury. And I can tell you as a funeral director working on it.
Okay. His opinion, based on his observation, but several things he said, including young people, no health problems, got the vaccine, died. The FDA and CDC has had to deny that anyone dies from vaccines. I mean, they're just out and out lying nonstop. In point of fact, I get the official figures, the Veris figures, vaccine adverse event reporting figures, plus the European figures, the UK figures, Scottish figures every week. Minimally, 50,000 dead. That's the low, low, low end. And over 6 million injured. And at least half of those serious injuries, some permanent injuries. Now, to give you a perspective of this, when the swine flu vaccine came out, and over 50 million Americans ultimately were, 40 million were recorded initially, but then there was another 10 million, by the time they stopped it, there were only 45 deaths in all of America, and they stopped it, took it off the market. And the normal black box warning comes after 5 deaths, and after 15 deaths, 20 deaths, that product is gone. So the worst we've had beforehand was 45 deaths, and now it's 50,000 deaths between the United States, United Kingdom, United States, and yet not a single article against it. Not a single one of the people that we've had, top world leading experts, Nobel Prize winners on our program, not a single interview or comment about them except to attack them. Here's what you didn't know. This is from today. Quote, top FDA scientists write letter to Lancet warning against Fauci's booster shots. And indeed, that happened. And the Lancet published this just out. And it strongly warns against vaccine boosters. So what did the FDA do? The FDA didn't allow the boosters for younger children because there's absolutely no need. And who's behind the boosters? Well, Anthony Fauci, but who else? Dr. Neil Ferguson of Imperial College. And those are the two major voices who are the so-called experts, and they get the panel that all agree, and they're the ones that get on media. And who's Neil Ferguson? He's the one who created the false pandemic mathematical model. All of it was shown to be wrong. Who said it was wrong? All Stanford, Oxford, Cambridge, Harvard, top epidemiologists and experts said it's wrong, and indeed it has been wrong. Did you know anything about the two top people on the FDA panel who quit instead of lending their support to this? No. And everything is good when it comes to boosters, they're telling us. Also, did any of the media, any of the mainstream media, go to the actual peer review science and look at the fact that the same ivermectin that the U.S. government doesn't want Americans to receive is saving lives across India? I mentioned last week Uttar Pradesh. That's one of India's most densely populated regions. It's doing so well that it's now considered COVID-free. They have 240 million people, which is about 75% of the total U.S. population, and they've just only had 24 cases of the virus and 0 deaths for the past many months. That's an outstanding, and it's also unique. There are 36 states in India, and it is dead last in infections and death. But yet, we will say, without absolute confidence, don't take ivermectin. I'll get to that tomorrow when I have some people on who are going to deconstruct that. But that's because of ivermectin, I-V-E-R-M-E-C-T-I-N, and now the state medical boards are sending warning letters to every doctor in every state in America. You use ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine or vitamins or minerals, you can lose your license to practice medicine. That's where they're going with this. So not only are they not preventing COVID, except get the vaccine, but they're actually causing people to die by the hundreds of thousands in the United States and the millions worldwide. That falls now into crimes against humanity. That is a form of medical genocide. And yet the New York Times is complicit. CNN and its dancing fools are complicit. All of the mainstream media is complicit. Congress is complicit. The White House is complicit. All federal agencies in the health field are complicit. And yet the average person still doesn't know what to believe or who to trust. Just want to share this with you because this is real science, not our artificial science. Oh, and you know when they tried to scare everyone by saying a hospital in Oklahoma was overwhelmed with people taking ivermectin? It was a fraudulent story. Everyone had to retract it, except Rolling Stone, that just changed the title of the article, and that is disingenuous. You should boycott Rolling Stone. I don't know that anyone actually reads it under the age of 90, but when you lie, and they out and out lied, you know, then too bad for them. But all publications lied. All of them said the same thing. They all were lies. And that lie has been uncovered. So just want to let you know that it's not just a matter of the people who refuse to vaccinate are bad. And even Don Lemon says they shouldn't even be given treatment in a hospital. Give it to someone who's been vaccinated. That's, do you stop and realize, Don, that the largest single ethnic group in the United States not receiving vaccines are African Americans? And you realize the largest educated group in the United States not receiving vaccines are PhDs. So if you're a PhD African American, and we had one on last week, who actually is a scientist in vaccines and immunology, and she explained why. So are you saying that these people shouldn't be treated if they have diabetes or a heart attack or a stroke or need an operation? Because that's what you're saying. Hate. Hate is not a healing. Hate is division between ideologies. And this is pure ideology on all the networks. It has nothing to do with science. Anyhow, more to come. But we have people standing by who want to give their thoughts. Let's go to Adam in New York City. Hi, Adam. Your turn.
Hi there. How are you? I'm a great admirer of yours. I've met you a bunch of times over the years. So I really appreciate you're a spiritual warrior. I really appreciate that. My concern related to all of this is, you know, how many eyeballs are you getting for your message? I feel like, I know you'll say the mainstream media is keeping you out, but I feel like you're not doing enough to get your broadcast mass distributed. And I think that's the core thing. Whenever I hear your spiritual warrior truths that are right on target, you're not reaching the masses, really, as much as you should. That's my thoughts on that.
Okay, here's a question back at you. You may be right. I have a small, I'm not a significant player. I recognize my weakness. Have you read Lao Tzu's Art of War?
Yes, yes.
Then you know you can't fight strength with strength. You have to fight your strength against the opposition's weakness. So my strategies are always different. I'm under the radar. What are you doing, Adam, to take this message I share and all the facts and documentation and supporting evidence, what are you doing to spread that to a larger audience?
I'm working on that. I'm working on the media thing. I just know that, you know, you were going to be on ABC or you were on WABC, and I'd love to see you on, like, network television, frankly. I know that you think it's impossible, but that's what I'd love to see.
I didn't say it's impossible. I've been on PBS stations. I had the number one fundraiser in the history of PBS. I was played so much in New York PBS and every station in the country that I called the station and spoke with the president, stop playing my show. And like BAI, he said, no, we got to play it because you're making the money. Unfortunately, okay, I was bored with seeing myself and other people were as well, but it's the reality. How many people do you think I reached with 32 different specials, all of them encouraging people to make healthy choices, showing junk food, showing healthy lifestyle, showing unhealthy lifestyle. And that comes with a certain pedigree of acceptance. How many people did I reach on ABC Network for 12 years till I voluntarily left, went over to WMC for the next 3.5 years with Alan Colmes and Barry Farber, 2 hours a night, 7 nights a week? How many people did I reach? How many people did I reach when I do a radio show that's number one progressive radio show in the world? Are you aware of the 13 to 15 million people who downloaded my show and the information last year with all, and how many of those people shared it with other people? If you sold 47 million books, do you imagine those people ever shared any of those insights and information? So until you see the totality of something and who the policymakers and opinion leaders are who benefit from information and share it with other people, then you don't have the full picture. I can understand the idea that, yes, the big messages come for the big mass of people, but it's not the mass of people I care to reach. See, you've not understood the first rule of war, and that is I do not have the strength to go up against the tyrants in any industry. They would wipe me away in a heartbeat, but they do not have the strengths I have in my field. So therefore, I use the strengths I have in order to challenge them in ways they cannot turn around on. I was standing yesterday ready to do some temperatures on everyone because I take everyone's temperature twice a day, wearing masks, etc. And the call comes in, and it was from Australia. So I put on the call, and I said, yeah. And they weren't calling me. They were calling someone else, and they said, we're down here, there's a big demonstration, and the government is just, you know, they're hurting people. And I said, What is it you want? Any ideas? And I said, well, you're doing it in the wrong way. I would do it differently. How would I do it? First of all, you talk about a large group. I just saw videos of that and live stream, and it was about maybe 250, 300 people. In a country as large as yours, that's a tiny, tiny element. So fighting them with their strength, all the police, and they cordoned people off. So if you went up or down, you were blocked. The road was blocked by police. So they tried pushing through the police. I said, you realize that the government can now say violent protesters. Why don't you think of this? Getting all the doctors, but don't do it on the internet because they're monitoring everything you do. Get all the doctors and nurses who want to have their voices spoken, and then get them to go peacefully, social distance, and wear a tape across their mouths, and tape across their eyes, and tape across their ears, and handcuff them with ties behind their back. Have them with their white medical and nursing coats on and their stethoscopes, and then have specific posters about showing tyranny by totalitarianism, whether it's Tiananmen Square, and that one person that was out there moving when the tank moved, he moved, great sacrifice he was making. And also Mussolini's 1922 when he introduced fascism, the black shirt, and also Hitler in 1932 and with the brown shirts and Kent State. Show the face we all recognize. Show the little girl running with napalm burns in Vietnam. Show the Holocaust victims, but don't mention Hitler and don't mention Nazis, because no one should ever be equating anything happening now with that, because it would do a lack of justice to the actual suffering, the actual murder, the actual horror of genocide at that level. So it's not good to compare them. But fascism has its own unique signature. So show all that with signs that remind the Australian people that now you have one with Australia. And you show the people being beaten, and you show posters, the people beaten with the rubber bullets and the mace, and say, today's fascism, because you have no rights. You know, you in Australia, you don't have a constitution, you don't have a bill of rights. You have totalitarianism, and it's draconian, and it's not working. Nothing they're doing is working, because they're doing everything wrong. They're using Anthony Fauci's playbook. They're using Imperial College's playbook. So if you have a passive demonstration that's done smartly, your strength, they can't match. Their only strength is force of power, like the police. And the police everywhere are acting the same. So that is the suggestion I gave them yesterday. Now, I don't know if they'll do that, but if they do, that will make the news. That'll go viral. And when that goes viral, now you reach someone. And by the way, do you know how many millions of people watched the interview I did with Carrie Mullis that no one else had watched since 1996 when I did it, who discovered got the Nobel Prize for discovering PCR tests, saying, don't use this test for diagnosis. Millions upon millions upon millions watched that. It's been used in documentaries that I've seen. So you wouldn't know that. The media wouldn't know it. It's under the radar. Remember, there's the battle above the line and the battle below the line. And you don't go above the line because you'll lose. They control the media. They control everything. The battle below the line, you have a chance of making change in those who are open to it. I'm not interested in having a demonstration or a lecture or a debate for those who are pro whatever the government says will do it, because they're not going to change their mind. I can't change their perception, and their perception becomes a reality. So what I would do is just engage in a completely futile effort. Whereas the person has an open mind, who is still questioning, who is still open to a dialogue, that's a person I'll try to reach. So, Adam, your task is to help make the message that you feel is important more available to people. So spend as much time as you can, within reason, not to upset your balance in your life, to share these insights every day. Because every one of those you share, ask them, if you believe this, if you benefit from this, please share it elsewhere. That's how suddenly we have a capacity to get more people better informed, better educated on our side. Appreciate your call, Adam. Thank you, everyone. And now, Eutrice Lee. Please stay tuned. She always has an informative show.